Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just used a biro in the dressing room, which someone else's spit came out of and leaked onto the page he was writing with. But whose spit was it? I don't know. It's Richard Herring! Hello! Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging out with the lady from the Shake and Vac advert the other day, and I have a feeling I might have done it her before in this context. She doesn't even use Shake and Vac when she vacuums. She just vacuums like normally. I mean, why would you put more stuff on the floor? It was a bad idea. Anyway, she calls it Rahalastapa. So, that was quite nasty. I was just writing notes about Al Murray. See that slight stain? That's someone else's spit. But whose spit is it? It could be Maria Bamford's spit, which wouldn't be a bad thing. But it could be, like, there was, like, a sketch show competition here. So it could be someone who does sketches. That's a terrible thing. I may have been infected. You don't know, do you? But, you know, so someone in showbiz has probably got some kind of disease in it. So I've been reading the news, which isn't much use to you people listening at home, because I think it's about June now at home. The week this was recorded, they were talking about the passports, the contract having gone to France, which has annoyed the contract for the blue passports. they're going to be made in France, which is kind of quite funny, isn't it? People get annoyed about it, but I say, how about the blue passports get made in France and the burgundy ones get made in the UK, and then we get to choose which ones we want to have based on how patriotic we are. No, I think it'd be hard, wouldn't it? That's, do you want the blue one from France or the burgundy one from the UK? Oh, then all the UK people will explode and we can go back to being in Europe. So that'll be good. I've been very busy this week, and next week coming on the tour. I've been to Glasgow twice this week, and very lovely shows both of them. I did John Maloney's. Got hair all over me. Sorry, it's not. I think it's my Wookiee book. It's hard to tell, isn't it, which one's the more hairy. John Maloney, who we had on, and we talked about that idea of doing the live at the Apollo, Dead at the Apollo for over 50s. That happened this week. He recorded 6 episodes of that fantastic show with lots of comedians over 50, which I just snuck into. I was basically the kid in the room. I really love the Glasgow shows. And then I did my stand-up show, annoyingly, on the Friday. So I was on that, but I was in Glasgow on Tuesday and Friday. And had to go to Colchester and Market Drayton in between. And Market Drayton, I thought, was just a place where puppets lived that was voiced by Brian Kent. But I was apparently, it's a real place. But I love the Glasgow audience. And I was thinking, the first time I went up to Glasgow was in the Oxford Review in 1988. And we were very nervous as English little posh kids going up, supposedly posh kids going up to Glasgow. And no one came, really. And we went down to silence, actually. And then it was the week that the two people in the show came up to us after, the two of the audience members came and talked to us afterwards and said, "You should have done more jokes about Piper Alpha," which had just happened that week, which was where like 170 people had died in a fire on an oil rig. So, yeah, I think that would have probably swung it for us, wouldn't it, if we'd just come on with that. But now, everyone loves me in Glasgow because I talk in their language. That is the thing, and that is the... They love me up there. So anyway, the John Maloney show's great. I also played in Walsall. I've now been to Warsaw, Indiana, Walsall, UK, but I haven't been to Warsaw, Poland. But once I've done that, then I've been to, I'm guessing, the 3 worst paper places in the world. And Warsaw, UK, is worse than Warsaw, Indiana. That's how bad it was. No offence to anyone from Warsaw. Thanks for coming. It was a lovely show. I was at a place called the Forest Arts. Oh, this is going to be nice. It was literally a fucking aircraft hangar in the middle of some dilapidated buildings. I mean, I don't know how it got the name the Forest Arts. There must have been a forest that they knocked down to build Warsaw. Anyway, thanks for having me in Warsaw. I will go on. We're going to crack on. So our first guest tonight, I mean, the only guest this week is... nearly gave the game away there, David. Just covered myself at the last minute. You're much better than last week's audience, I'll tell you that right now. She is probably best known for appearing on the show When Game Shows Go Horribly Wrong. That is usually when Richard Herring is on them, trying to win them. We please welcome Desiree Birch, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Sit down. Pull up a microphone. Oh my goodness. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. Those game shows went horribly, horribly wrong. Someone had to let you guys know.
Yeah. What kind of things went horribly wrong in the game shows?
I don't know. One of the hosts was a pedophile. That's okay. A thing. It's pretty bad.
During the actual game show, though?
No, but he was massively creepy. Like, he was Trump and a little extra creepy. Okay. So, like, yeah.
I think I've seen that clip of that guy.
Yeah. He's a lot of back rubbing. Yeah.
It was a different time back then. Men could
rub anyone.
Flirt and kiss with children on TV.
Yes.
Good. I was thinking, you know, when I got knocked out of Pointless by 2 points, that would be going horribly wrong. But no, that probably is... That's...
I really
want a Pointless trophy. I mean, if it comes to it, if they say this is the only way you're going to get one, Rich. Oh. No, I wouldn't do that. So,
you've never gotten any other kind of trophy that you'd do that
I've
for the trophy.
I've never got any. Well, I've got the Chortle Internet. I've got about 10 Chortle Internet awards, but
there you go.
What use are those? Can't even chuck them on the fire. They don't burn. So it's... You've got awards. You won the Funny Woman Award, Women Award.
Yes, I did. A couple of years ago, 2015.
Yeah. So let's hear your story a little bit. So you've come over from America. In America, you were doing a lot of theater.
Yeah. I still do theater, but I was doing a lot more like one-woman shows, device theater, that kind of stuff. Did some stand-up. But, I mean, there are various ways not to get paid, especially when you're working as an artist in New York. I tried many of them, enjoyed doing that, and then moved over here.
What brought you to the UK?
No, we broke up recently, so don't get too romantic about it. But we were together for like 3.5 years. It was like a legit relationship, but yes, that's the reason I moved. Because I was, you know, I was in New York, and I just, I'd been there for so long. I was there for 13 years, and like somewhere around between like year 5 and 8, you start going like, I need to get out of here. Like, this is no kind of life. I need to get out of here. And you say that for at least 5 years before you do anything. And so it was just like this window opened, and I was like, I'm in love. Let's go do the thing I never left time to do because I was too busy working for cheap. So, yeah.
And so did you plan to come and work here? You sort of thought, let's see how the theater and stand-up goes in the UK, or is this...
Yeah, I mean, I had done Edinburgh a couple of times with a theater piece, and so, you know, I'd met people. I clearly enjoyed that sort of scenario. Like, I was just like, oh, everyone here goes and sees live theater and comedy and performance all the time. This is like a utopia. Let's go. And so, you know, when I met this person, I was like, okay, yeah, like, let's do it. Moved over, and then I had to figure out how to get a visa because I desperately did not want to get deported. Like, I think I saw Border Force on day 2, and I was like, oh, no! like, they pumped it in specifically because they knew where I was staying.
So, did you grow up in California, though?
I did, yes.
Yeah. So, I saw you talking. We do some TED Talks and some NerdCon talks.
Yeah.
So I saw you talking about growing up.
Yeah.
And you, so your background, you're saying you're quite middle class.
Yeah.
But not that well off.
Yeah, no, so we were...
Does middle class mean different in...
Yeah, I was confused when I got here, because I was like, oh, this is middle class. And I was like, that person's fucking rich. Like, I don't know what you're talking about, middle class. Like, in America, everybody thinks they're middle class, even though they're poor. Like, they can't admit or ever be told that they're poor, because they're on their way. So there's, like, a wide bracket, unless you know, because you live in a certain area or it looks like something, you're poor. And so, you know, we moved to... Especially in Southern California, there are all of these suburban towns that they just kept building tract homes in. And they all look exactly the same. And so if you moved out there at the right time, it was just... I mean, seriously, I go to the place where my mom lives now, and I'm at the traffic light, and there's, like, a Target there and a Walgreens there, and there's a tumbleweed going across the street. Like, that's how just raw and new everything is that they keep excavating and building there. So, yeah, my parents moved to this, you know, town, this suburban town, like, when I was 6 months old out of Los Angeles, and that's where I grew up. Yeah, it was super, like, we were clearly the, like, Black people on our block who were poor, but like we still, you know, like, yeah, grew up in a middle class area.
Yeah, because you were saying in one of the talks that you really want to learn the piano.
Yeah,
your parents just laughed in your face.
Yes, oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it was, I would say after, white people, the next sort of majority was like East Asian, Korean and Chinese predominantly. And so I went to school with a lot of kids who were like getting piano lessons from like the womb almost, you know. And so like everybody had this sort of ability to do music and that kind of thing. And I was like, I want to do that. I was, you know, one of these nerdy kids. So I hung out with other nerdy kids and I wanted to do like cool musical nerdy kid stuff. And they were just like, that's never happening. When did she ask for a piano? Like, it was a running joke.
Because I am middle class in a UK sense, although though my parents were teachers, we didn't have much. I did have piano lessons.
Jealous.
And I really hated it. I didn't want to go, and it made me feel bad that I could have just sent my piano lessons to you. I hated it. I did piano lessons about 5 years and hated every second of it.
But like, if there's a piano in a room, you can walk up to it and just go like, oh, la la,
no.
And like everyone's like,
no, no, I can't, because I was terrible. And I didn't practice at all. If I managed to, I went in once to the house once and I couldn't find the piano teacher, just so pretended that. And I didn't look that hard, and then I just went home and said they weren't there.
Even though the door was wide open and I heard a faucet running.
So it makes me feel, suddenly I look back and go, that was, you know, very ungrateful of me when you were there.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't be anything but ungrateful when you're a kid. Because you just show up and you're like, I didn't ask to be here, and you're not giving me what I want. And everything kind of sucks, and I can't wait until I'm older. You know, at least that's the way I was. Like, I always thought, like, oh, I can't wait until I'm older and my life's my own, and I get to do everything I want to do, because that's what you think it is. Yeah. And then you grow up, and you're just like, oh, I just want to look at clouds. And, you know? Yeah, no time.
It's cool being a kid, you know, and that is it's a shame that you want to get away from it. I even feel like my three-year-old's a bit like that. She seems to want to grow up, and you go, no, this is good, enjoy it. Say poo more. I don't mean to encourage
you. I mean, she can continue saying poo.
She will. She does. She doesn't. She will. And you went to Yale.
I did.
Yeah.
And
when you say that in America, everyone cheers.
Ooh. No, I barely say it because the problem is, like, you know, like people go like, oh, where did you go to college? And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I was in Connecticut, or like I studied New Haven or whatever. And like people just sort of like leave it there because you don't want to be responsible for everything that means, because as soon as you get something wrong, they're like, oh, Yale doesn't know the answer to this one. And you're like, dude, I'm a human being. I don't know that thing. Also, George W. Bush went to Yale. So like, let's keep the bar where, you know. Let's make it fair. Right?
I fancy he might have had some financial help. From
yeah.
The family that you may, that I'd reckon he could have had piano lessons.
I bet. I mean, whatever. He's painting all the time. I'm sure he did have piano lessons. I'm sure he's a regular Picasso when he's not being a war criminal.
He liked to drink, didn't he? So he probably wouldn't have been able to play the piano. Well, let's have a look at some of your work. So you did one of your theatre shows, I think, was Tar Baby. That's,
yes.
So what was that about?
So it's one of those things that, like, you say it in America, everybody knows exactly what it's about. It's a show about race and capitalism in America. So it's like a very old-timey racist term, Tar Baby. And I love taking things that people are like, well, you can't talk about that, and being like, fucking watch me. So it was this interactive carnival of race and capitalism. So there are all these carnival-esque games, and I'm the barker, and it's all about the selling and the packaging of the narrative that supports racism, you know, the narratives that we continue to tell ourselves and our children about, you know, what is true about certain people, when ultimately those stories are made up so that people can make money hand over fist off of those people and feel good about it because they don't consider them to be, you know, people or equal to them in any way.
Sure.
We'd have like test your strength against racism, and there was like a big test your strength, and people would come up and like have to refute, you know, racist statements or you know, rationalize them or try to reckon with them, you know, and it's great because, you know, you slowly start to bring people in and kind of make them feel like we're all in this together. It's not about, you know, like pointing fingers and blaming anybody. And that's usually like the sort of knee-jerk reaction that people have that makes them unwilling to engage in further conversation. Whereas if you can kind of go like, look, we're all part of a racist society, so like it would be weird if you weren't racist, because like how did you manage to grow up that way in the society we're in? So like, let's just talk about it. So it is the sort of slow motion of getting people like more interactive, more involved in the conversation that happens in the space.
Sure.
And then of course, you know, I've got to like yell and scream at the end just to make them feel like they got their money's worth. They're like, wow, that black lady sure got angry. Wow, that was important. We're going to write them. Yeah. So anyway.
Well, it's sort of astounding, A, that the, you know, it seems to be getting worse again in America, the racial tensions and the racial issues and racism. Let's just say that. In the president of the United States seems to be quite racist.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and seems to represent a very outspoken contingent of people who feel emboldened by him. I think that, I mean, it is astounding in some ways that it's coming back, but it's not because it didn't go anywhere.
Right.
I think it just seemed like it did. There were these like lovely veneers that we put on, but we actually didn't sort of change things that are at the root of these problems. Like for me, I felt like education is a big one, not only like access to, you know, like adequate kind of education, but the way, you know, just simply the way the history books are constructed and the narratives that we tell ourselves about, you know, who's good and who's bad and why it all happened. And I feel like, you know, I definitely sat in a lot of classrooms as we were studying slavery, as you would do in an American classroom, because it's like the only history we have. Like, it's like that and like the Monroe Doctrine, and then like JFK got shot, and then it's like the rest of the, you know, Billy Joel song, you know, but like most of it is slavery, right? I guess that would have been a downer way to start that song. But like, you know, so it's, you know, I mean, I definitely sat in those classrooms and, you know, there is this narrative, like we don't have hear any of their voices or about their humanity whatsoever. So it's just pictures of like people being beaten or swinging from trees. And then everyone in class is like, oh, that's you, you know, because I'm the other black kid in this advanced placement class because I'm the one, you know, and that's. Yeah, and there's nobody there to correct that narrative because you've got a textbook that was issued from Texas that's like, well, that's, look at all these cool white people did some stuff. Look on page two, you know? And you know, I'm not trying to detract from the fact that those cool white people did do some cool stuff, but the fact of the matter is, like, America specifically, but I mean, honestly, the world has been built by lots of hands working really hard, you know, of various different colors, and it's important to not only, like, recognize that, but, like, tell narratives from another point of view so that, you know, whatever, people who are kind of in power don't just think, well, we're in power because we're better, which is the sort of implied answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and America seems to be going insane.
Yeah, well, I would love, I mean, we'd all love to think that this is, that, you know, like, you don't hit rock bottom until you stop digging, right? And so we'd like to think that, like, maybe we're hitting that and we have to make some actual, profound, real change, like we're getting down to the root. But I you know, every time I'm optimistic, it's short-lived. So, yeah, I don't have good answers on that. Like, I think we are going crazy, but I don't know. There's too many damn people. Like, with too many opinions. I don't know how anyone would, like, pull that together.
Everywhere in the world is like it, you know, and everywhere in the world has these hundreds of years old, you know, argument. You kind of feel like the slavery one got settled, but there's...
Yeah.
Then we found out what was right and wrong about that, and then we had a war about it, and that the right people won the war.
Yeah, but then the concessions were given to all the wrong people again.
And then, but those people who lost are still going, but we weren't really wrong.
Yeah, no,
and
seriously.
Still 200 years
it's our culture and our history. I mean, at this point, honestly, I'm hoping for alien intervention. Like, I think the only thing that could help us out is if we discovered, like, some other, like, people, entities, beings, you know, and most likely decided to have a war with them, because that's what we do, but at least we join together.
Well, the racists would hate aliens more than they hate other races, I think.
So I don't know.
It could bring the human race, at least your human beings, not lizard people.
I mean, but if the lizards were slightly pink in tone, would it be the same? I don't know.
Well, we're not going to sort it out here. The gun thing is just crazy as well. But anyway, let's me. It's not your fault. I'm not going to blame you. It's partly your fault. You should have done a bit more to stop it when you were there.
I mean, I lunged. I tried. I just missed.
And you do quite. There's a lot of sexuality in your work.
Oh yeah, almost exclusively. Yeah. It's weird. but it's great because I found another country that's as hung up as the one I'm from. So just keep working that angle. There is. I think a lot of that is just stems from the fact that I didn't have it for so long. I was obsessed.
Yeah. So you were brought up as quite a few comedians are, and I was brought up as a Christian.
Yeah.
And then you kind of rebel against that. And I was a sort of late developer as well in terms of... you know, getting interested in sex. Well, I was interested in sex.
Yeah.
I was scared of it.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. There's the interest and then there's the fear. Like, there was just a time where you're like, oh, like, guys are cool and stuff, but, like, they're scary. They're, you know, it's intense. And so, somebody was telling me about this study about how, you know, teenage girls, you know, when they're all screaming over boy bands and all that stuff, but it's like they tend to, their attractions or crushes tend to be on guys who seem safe, which is why we're always like, that guy seems like he might not be interested in you, girl, you know, but it's because, like, he seems like, okay, he's kind of like my age or seems young like me, and he has some qualities that I can recognize physically, but he seems a little bit, like, safer or, you know, more softer somehow, as opposed to, like, just men, you know, like, they just, when they get all craggy and you're just like, I don't know what. Yeah. So I think I felt that way for quite some time. And also, whatever, I was just like a chubby, nerdy kid. So I was just like, this is never going to happen. especially in Southern California, like, especially in LA and that kind of area, like, everyone has the same blonde highlights and looks like the same sort of magazine pullout. And if you don't fit into that, like, it's hard to develop, you know, like, you just kind of feel like, I'll live when I can finally figure out how to become something else, you know? And if you're rich enough, then you just get surgery and then you do it. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I got super serious. It's screwed up. The model screwed up.
You're covering a lot of, you know, serious subjects in your comedy, so we're bound to be getting a little bit serious. But so, I mean, you've done various shows about sex. So you did 52 Man Pickup, which was based on a pack of cards.
So,
I like the sound of this.
So basically, everybody has a skank phase at some point. Mine happened circa my early to mid-20s. And I'm going to, you know, gender stereotype, but I would say women love making lists of things. And so as I was going through, I was like, I think there was like Christian guilt back here. And it's like, well, if I can remember all the names of the people that I've hooked up with, it wasn't just like random. It meant something. And so I would like put down their name and something about it so that it was meaningful in some way. And then I was like, some of these stories are batshit crazy. Like, I shouldn't tell some of these. So yeah, so basically by the time I was doing the show, it was called 52 Man Pickup. I took a deck of cards. I put everyone that I had slept with on a card, you know. And I mean, when I started doing the show, it was 30. But then we rapidly got up to 52. I mean, it was weird to me because, it happened like maybe once or twice that like someone had seen the show at an earlier phase and then wound up in it at a later one. But I just felt, because most people see you do that and they're like, ha, you're really cool. I'm going to peace the hell out because like I don't want. But then there's a certain ilk of human being that's kind of like, yeah, like I'm going to get my name on the charts, you know, like it's weird.
Well, a lot of female comedians say that, you know, it's not good for picking up men.
No.
But that seems to be the way to do it. They haven't got the card system. Yeah. There are 22 places available.
Yeah, yes.
We've got a couple of king places left.
Well, yes, they are ranked. And I was just like, okay, at some point I was like, I could bump him down, whatever. Or just like, no, you're a two. There's not enough twos in a deck. They're really not to sufficiently cover my history. So people would be like, he's a five? And I'm like, did you see what the twos were? And they're like, okay, fine.
Yeah. And around this time, you were working as a dominatrix as well, is that right?
Yeah, I actually, this was before this time. So I worked as a dominatrix actually before sort of that time. I think that time came out after my dom work because I was still a virgin when I was working as a dominatrix,
really?
Which is, you know, a wonderful way to lead one's life. But, you know, essentially I was kind of like, well, I graduated from Yale. I still have my virginity intact. Boo. You know, demerit. So I was like, okay, let me figure out, let me do what a smart nerdy kid does and like, you know, basically read a book on how to do this. But my reading book was like doing an internship, you know, like just going to sex work, which is what, a lot of young women do this when they're in university or just outside of it because you make so much more money an hour. And, you know, as a dom, like you're essentially there to like, you know, be this fantasy. And then at the end, he has a wank. And like, I was just like, if I had gotten paid for some of the guys that I actually saw have a wank in my real life, like it would have been preferable. And so I was like, this is a good scenario. Because a lot of times, you know, especially because there's so much emotional labor in being a woman, even if you aren't engaging in sex, there's like just dealing with the advances. And a lot of times it was like, if I were being paid to be in this scenario, I would understand what the rules were.
Yeah.
And in real life, nobody understands what the rules are. So it's nice to be in a place where it's like, I get what the rules are. And, you know, whatever. Seen that before. It's fine. So yeah, so I did that. It was wearing corsets and pleather and random stuff. Because you have to buy your own costumes, and if you're broke in 23, you're just like, I don't know, let's go to Hot Topic and like pick out some, you know, pleather looking things, and it's fine, you know.
And what kind of things did I'm not
everyone wants to know.
I'm a very vanilla person in a lot of ways, and I can't, you know, I'm sort of embarrassed about having sex at all, let alone I've got to be very drunk. And then if anyone asked you to dress up or play a role or anything, I'm too embarrassed to do that.
Yeah, well,
so this sounds like another level.
It's easier if you don't know them because, you know, essentially there is a power dynamic that is set up where, you know, even if you're 23 and he's 53, you're meant to be the one that's in charge and he's like, you know, if he's does this a lot, then he kind of knows what he's coming in for and whatever. And if it's his first time, he's like freaking out, you know. So you just kind of come up in there and you like tell him what to do, and you kind of develops a bit of a persona, you know, and various things, you know, anywhere from like on the sort of soft core end is sort of like, you know, sensual dominance, which is like everybody I worked with was like, oh, boring. I just want to hit him. Because, you know, like sensual dom is like, you know, you're wearing like lingerie and you're being like very nurturing and it's very like maternal, or like maybe they want to wear a diaper or something like that. Yeah. And it's all that stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to hug this asshole. Like, we're not friends, you know? And then it goes all the way to like, you know, stuff that's, I mean, I never did sort of like needle play, but some people do that, you know, where it's, you know, piercing and sewing and things like that, where, you know, I'm just saying, some of your friends are paying, all right? So, my personal favorite was CBT, which is a form of therapy, but not what you're thinking. It was cock and ball torture, which just, you know, is a bunch of clothespins or weights or tying it up or whatever. And I was amazed, because the thing is, like, for me, that was like a science experiment. You know, it's like, what can I do to this guy's junk, you know, before I've gone too far? And usually if they're into that, like, too far keeps getting pushed further and further and further. So, like, some of those things can take a beating. Like, I was amazed, because, like, I was going softer because I'm like, you do have two testicles in there. Like, I don't want to. And he's like, no, step on it, kick it. It was just like, okay. But yeah, no, I, in the most recent show that I did, covered a lot of that too. And there were some spectacular ones. I stood on a man's neck once. That's 20 stone on a human neck right there. Yeah, thank you very much. He had like a neck, like a tree stump. Like, he was one of those guys who was just like, rah, and it was just veiny and whatever. But I was still like, this is crazy. And there's no insurance to cover any of this. So just two people in a room, me trying to survive a half hour and him trying to like, essentially just beat off. Like, I didn't ever get that. 'Cause I was like, you just paid money. And you're doing the freest thing anybody's ever... Okay, cool.
Someone once tried to put a champagne bottle in my bottom.
Was it corked or uncorked?
It was uncorked.
Empty?
It was an empty champagne bottle. I didn't like it.
I can imagine you might... I mean, like, you didn't say, I asked someone to put a champagne bottle in. You're like, someone tried to... How does that work? You just running around going, oh, and then like, come on, I'm so close.
Just trying to sneak it in there when I wasn't paying attention.
No sneaking anything on that. There's a security system, it'll go off immediately. You have to have permission to go in.
Right, I'll ask you an emergency question because I've talked about my bottom. And it will be, look, it's opened up at that page that I did mention beforehand, so I'll ask you. And this is, you know, it's a neat segue. If you had to be anally violated by a popular chocolate bar, if you had to be, which chocolate bar would you like inserted in your anus?
Like, with someone following me around, not like someone was following the volition of the chocolate bar.
No, you would be, you'd be prepped and ready to go.
Yes. Snickers got freaky all of a sudden and decided to hop up there. I think... no, that's wrong. Okay. This is terrible, because I can't think of what... I feel like a Twix is the right size.
Okay. A single Twix or a double Twix.
Yeah, a single Twix.
I think you'd have to have both of them up there.
Yeah, okay, yeah, fine.
You might be able to, like, stick them together lengthways.
Yes, right. Give them warm in the hand so that they mush and then...
And become one. A very long Twix. Okay, sorry, I'm embarrassed to ask you that question.
I love Twix, and now I will never think of them same when I eat them.
No one likes Twixes. No one loves them. Everyone just thinks they're all right, especially now.
I love them.
What is the strangest thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire?
I don't spend a lot of time around bonfires. Wow. So, you know, it's not like I've ever saw, like, a torn off page of a nudie mag or something. You know, some, like, a picture of where the evidence is or something. Yeah. Like, no, I just feel like it's typically stuff where you're just like, you know, like, that's a metal thing. Why did you try to burn a coat hanger or what? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, yeah. Yeah.
That's okay. Sadly, that's my chortle awards. Awesome. I could have burnt my chortle awards.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a new... Oh, no, hold on. I've had a new... Oh, it's on this page. That's fine.
Why does your journal have a merkin on it? What
because
it?
It's Chewbacca. Oh, it's based on Chewbacca.
Oh, it's Chewy. Okay,
it's cool. Chewbacca, Chewbacca. What is the worst music you've ever had to have... that you've had on whilst having sex?
Well, this isn't the worst, but it's the most memorable. Okay. Because I've... whatever. You guys know... as far as Americans are concerned, any British person talking is a turn on. And so I definitely, when I was living in New York, had a couple of encounters with British men before I moved over. And this was one where, like, everything that, like, he's, you know, he's like a white dude. And, like, everything that came on, it was like Brown Sugar and, like, all this stuff that I was just like, are you? And he was like, you're joking. Like, put on the music you like. And I was like, no, literally, like, I just downloaded this stuff, but, like, it's just playing the most sort of patronizing, like, soundtrack of, like, all of the most exoticizing things that would come. And it was just, I mean, it's bad when you're listening specifically to what the music is. Yeah. And it was super distracting.
Yeah, it's very off-putting. I was talking about it with Maria Bamford, I think, who was talking about it with, someone played Enya's Sail Away. When I was quite, and that's very difficult to have sex with. I was thinking the best song might be the Hokey Cokey, because at least that's instructions.
Yeah. You don't put your right foot in, though. Please. I mean, you can, but consent.
This is my new emergency question. Are you ready? What is the most beautiful thing that you have ever destroyed?
Oh. God, you know, you wish you had like time to prep these. And
no, that's
things.
Why. That's why. You got
yeah,
it,
but like I can't remember what happened beyond 2 days ago. That's what I'm still hungover from. The most beautiful thing that I have.
I find it in. I was thinking the reason this question came up. It wasn't a beautiful thing, but one of the most memorable days of my teenage years. Was me and my friends went up to Shipham Wood and we found like an old cottage that had fallen down and we just threw stones at it for the whole afternoon until it was really falling down even more. And it was kind of, but it was an exhilarating, wonderful day of vandalism.
Yeah.
But it was this probably, you know, 19th century, you know, woodsman's cottage we basically destroyed.
But I feel at that point you probably feel like you're a part of the sort of evolutionary process, just like, you know, like worms and maggots come and like eat the body and then it feeds the ground. You know, you're like, this thing is about to be like, let's just fully consume and destroy it. And it's the circle of life. You were doing a good thing. I love spinning this shit. There's a better answer to this question. It's just not coming to me. But like the most immediate thing that I destroyed, it was only because it was funny. So I was with like some rich friends, because you go to Yale and you get some of those, and then they take you to places and don't make you pay. It's great. And they're like, you're really charming. I like made a whole life on being really funny and entertaining and broke. Sorry, guys. And then them wanting me to come along anyway. But we were in... I want to say, like, they had some, like, house on a lake in Wisconsin, and there was a boat that they had, like a pontoon boat, like a tiny boat. And, like, you know, they were from Texas, so, like, they would just come with coolers and coolers of beer and all the booze and be like, hey, we're drinking, we're going to spin the boat around until we fall down or whatever, right? And so they had this game where they were, like, shooting this sort of firecracker thing, and that would explode and have, like, a little, you know, thing that would come down. And then the game was to try to go race the boat to catch the little parachuted thing, you know, while you're drinking on a lake that's empty. So, like, I think that at some point, you know, I'm standing there and, like, they're racing and I'm, like, trying to, like, get around to the other side of the table, but at the last moment they make this sharp turn and I do this very comical, like, Chris Farley, like, smash right through the table. Like, I mean, and everyone, you know, so it's like they shift the boat really fast and suddenly it's just, like, smash, like something you would see on Saturday Night Live. Like, how did she just go through that? And everyone's like, are you okay? And I couldn't breathe for laughing so hard because it was so amazing. And I was just like, I just completely destroyed your boat. And they're like, it's fine, we're rich. And it was hilarious. So it wasn't like a beautiful thing, but it was like, I don't know, I just, destroying things is a sexy feeling.
It is. It's like, that's Milton Satan feels the same, only in destroying find IEs. Slightly educational, only in destroying find IEs. That's what Satan says in Paradise Lost. Come on, kids. It's not all about bums and farts.
Oh, I remember another thing. On the last day of college, senior year, my roommate, me, and his friend were super drunk. We had watched Streetcar Named Desire, and we destroyed all of the plates against the front of the building going, a man's home is his castle! Smash! And just over and over again. Wow. And they were like, we're afraid we can't renew your lease. And we're like, we're leaving, bitches! That was really satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something great about, you know, destruction. It's a weird thing. I mean, that's the problem with the world. It's much easier to destroy than it is to create.
Yeah.
And it's kind of satisfying. I'd quite like to smash the Mona Lisa.
Because,
you know, I'm never going to draw the Mona Lisa. So, second best, be the bloke who smashed it up. Hit a shit on it. That would be on the Wikipedia page, wouldn't it? Of the Mona Lisa. The painting was finally destroyed by being smashed and defecated on by Richard Herring.
I mean, would you smash it on a thing? Like, because I feel like I would just be like, want to pop my head through where her head is. Be like, it's me! Like, that's how I would destroy it.
I think, like, it's quite small, though, the Mona Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
I bet it's like a little...
That or
when
something.
You go to look at it, it's up on the wall over there. Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah, it's that chick.
And I know what that looked like. I've seen it loads of times. Didn't need to go and queue up for 14 hours. Good. That was a very interesting story about the boat, I thought. That's good. I'm going to keep that emergency question. That's
it's great when you have to convince your audience to be interested.
It's convincing me. I like to, when I do a new emergency question, I always try and big it up to myself. So you do the, as well as stand-up and as well as theatre stuff, you do these kind of TED Talk kind of inspirational
speeches. People find me inspirational for some fucking reason. No, I mean, I don't do a lot of them, but I have done, like, speaking. So, yeah, I think that I am fortunate to live in an era where stories from my life and lives like mine are sought after because they haven't been heard for so long. And so I think people, you know, want to hear about, you know, you take something from your life and you turn it into a bigger picture, whatever. And I think as comedians and creators, we do that in general just because I feel like if you're sidelined a lot in life, you get a lot of time to observe things and you start to put things together and then you're just desperate for anyone to hear you. And so you find a career with a microphone.
Yeah.
So I've done a little bit of that with, like, with TED Talks or with NerdCon, which is like a cool world of, like, all of the people who probably subscribe to your podcast. You know, like they keep live performance going. And I got hooked up to that through working on Welcome to Night Vale. And so, you know, I think the people who follow that and, like, really love it, like, it really has changed their lives in a radical way and brought them a community of people who are like them, where they were all individually separated in their own various communities. And so it's really important to them to be like, I'm coming together not only to see this fictional place that is accepting of all types of human, and otherwise, if you ever listen to the podcast, it's all about, like, you know, aliens and ghosts and otherworldly things. But also, when they come to the shows, they're meeting up with people that they maybe see in other or never have or only talk to online. Yeah. And so it's like a huge sort of community building thing. And then once you're kind of, you know, once you're in with the nerds, man, they take care of you. Like, nerds care, you know, because they're just like, thank you so much for saying things that I am too fucking shy to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it is, you know, it's, I think that is, I think the great thing about podcasts and that kind of, you know, live experience is that it just, you're sharing something and people, even if it's quite a different life that someone's leading, I think you'll find the things that resonate.
Yeah.
I think podcasts especially, I get so many emails from people saying, this helped me through this illness or this difficult time in my life. And you're kind of not thinking when I'm doing, talking about shitting on the Mona Lisa. I'm not thinking, this is going to help someone through.
But one person.
This is going to be the thing that makes this person decide that their life is worth living after all. That Richard Herring might one day shit on the Mona Lisa. I've got to stay alive to
see. But they laugh at that and the two.
I'm going to do it for you. It's what?
It's a promise.
Oh no!
Uh-oh. Not for you specifically. That's the problem. There's a problem when a crazy one thinks that the whole podcast is just for them, and that they can talk to it, and then they'll get and they'll answer
but
back.
That's the thing about a podcast. They're really intimate things. Yeah. Even though, you know, you're just listening to them, you know, in your car. But usually in your car, you're like singing really loudly. You're doing other intimate things. You're eating terrible food out of a bag. You know, things that you wouldn't show to other people. Or you're cleaning around your house. You're doing like, and this thing is going directly into your brain. Like, there is an intimate, I understand that. Like, I do start to feel like I, you know people. And then you see them in real life and you're like, that's not you. It's not at all the picture I had in my head of who you are. Like, fix yourself, you know?
But the NerdCon one I saw, you basically had written something and then your computer, you'd lost
yes.
it. So it was, you just ad-libbed, I mean, you ad-libbed having written it.
Yeah, because I had been working on the thing, and it's weird to be at a nerd convention and have a computer fail, because you're like, literally anyone can help me, but like also, like, it's too complicated and no one can help me. So yeah, I was like, well, I remember what I was going to talk about, so like, let's go for it. And I was just pacing back and forth trying to remember like notes. And then, you know, you get out there and you've been on stage before and that kind of kicks in and you just kind of go, like, let me just actually talk to these people and connect a little bit and try to be funny. And I think if you kind of get sort of funny and meaningful across, people are appreciative and also just put their expectations way, way, way down. I mean, if my computer hadn't broken, I would have had to come up with some other reason why they should feel bad for me, right?
Well, it's a big skill to be able to, you know, I think that for most people, that would be, the idea of standing up and talking would be terrible. But the idea of standing up and talking and then losing the thing.
Is the nightmare.
Yeah, it's the worst thing. I think even as a comedian and even someone who works, if you think, I've written that thing, and then you've got to let it go to the extent, but also, you know, it's very easy to find a line if you want to watch it, and it views like a written piece.
Oh, good.
I think.
I walked off stage and I was just like, "How? Oh, I can't believe I screwed this up. How? This is an important thing." And everyone's like, "That was great, thank you." And I was like, "Really? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah." That happened. Totally happened.
I'm very interested in the poster that I remember actually in Edinburgh of I can't remember which show it was for, but the poster that you won awards for, was your face.
Yes. Covered in dicks! So many dicks! I know you're... I mean, not like... Nobody
not,
put actual dicks on my face and took a picture. It was... the show is called Desiree Birch, This is Evolution. But the poster was just a photo of me, but... we took basically all the dick pics I'd ever received in my life, because I grew up in the age of the internet, and if you go on there to find a date, you get a bunch of dongs you didn't ask for. And I kept them because I'm weird. I make a list of the random people I sleep with, and then I also collected the dicks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was like, well, he gave it to me. It's mine now, isn't it? At some point we ran out of dicks, so I did have to ask a gay friend of mine for his dick pics, and then we got all the remaining dicks. It's like basically everything, you know, it's like a picture of me like this, but like they're all small, so it looks like a painting, like they're done. Yeah. So that, I mean, especially because it's like textured and veiny and whatnot, but like you look closer and you're like, oh, her eyebrows are just like tiny black dicks, and like her hair is just like black dicks coming out like this, and then there are red dicks here, and like, you know, it was
amazing.
Really fun.
To someone of my generation, it seems incredible, because I think I probably stopped dating officially, 10 years ago.
You have a date in the audience, like,
you know, I've been back on the last couple of years since the wife's had a couple of kids, you know.
Yeah.
No, so 10 years ago, over 10 years ago, I stopped dating, and I think once someone asked for a picture of my penis.
Asking is different. Yeah. Like if you're
so the idea, you know. I just can't comprehend how we got to the situation where that's a flirtation technique. That the first thing you do is send a picture of your penis. It's not. I mean, even if it's a really good penis,
it's not
the first thing you want to see.
Although there's this whole movement now of taking like really lovely, photographically satisfying dick pics. Like these women got together and created a site of like how to make a good dick pic. You know, to talk about like lighting and angles and all of these various things to make your dick pics better. Because like if you're gonna go for it, like make it good. You know, like whatever, throw some Instagram filters on there. You know, like make it classy. Because like sometimes you get them and it's just like. You just like look down with your phone and then took a picture of it like that, and it does look like a crime scene photo. Like, a flash went off, and it's the shadows are all weird. Yeah. Like,
I'd be tempted to like draw a face on it or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Is that all right.
You probably wouldn't be the first. I didn't get that one. You're like, I'm certain of it. Actually, I've seen the evidence. But yeah, I've struggled with trying to figure out the psychology behind it too, because I imagine there is. I, you know, they say that men are more visual in their sexuality, so I think that like they see something and it turns them on, and they think that if they show something and someone else sees it, that will turn them on too. And if that person is another man, there's a much higher chance of that being true. But like women's attraction works in a different way. So, you know, unless she's asked for it because you're in the middle of like, oh, hey, I'm doing this and like show me, you know, and you're doing that in real time, then it's just like, what the hell am I going to do with that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and also, like, when I was growing up, like, you had flashers, and that was the saddest, worst thing to be. And then this is just, like, lazy flashers. Like,
can't even bother to buy a coat and cowardly flashers. Yeah. But I think maybe also they have some insecurity in there, too, being like, hey, is this okay? Like, I do have a friend who's, like, has a male friend who has sent her several of his penis pictures to be like, what about this one? Is this one good? How's my dick? Like, and it's just, I mean, it's a combo vanity, insecurity sort of loop, you know.
And does it ever work? Does it work? Has that worked on you? Someone sending pictures of their penis and then you go, okay, yeah, let's go. Let's have a little go.
I can't think of a time when I was like, I wasn't immediately like, wah. You know, I think it's only if you are under an understanding, like you've gotten to the place where both of you pretty much are sure that this is only going to be about sex.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of like, well, good. At least there's confirmation of, you know, what to...
I think it's fine somewhere down the line, but it's the opening gambit that I find. People saying I've closed my direct messages on Twitter because you just get dick pics.
Yeah.
No one's ever sent me a picture of anything.
I'm going to send you so many dick pics. Everyone tonight, send him a dick pic.
I don't think you can direct message me unless you follow me, unless I follow you.
But still, you'll get plenty.
Yeah. Just do them in open. I'd like to see a few, just to see.
Twitter's going to shut it all down.
I'm pretty sure mine's better than all of yours, is what I'm saying. So I'd like to see the evidence. I'd love to see your erect penis, David. You may have to find some photos from 10 or 15 years ago for that.
Terrible. I mean, penises... It's interesting to me when penises age better than faces. Sometimes they age better and sometimes they age worse. Yeah. So he might have like a 23-year-old, you know, stallion down there that's just been, you know, it's been moisturized.
He is nodding.
See?
It has been moisturized. Also, he works nuclear physics, so I reckon it's probably grown over, like just the radiation is probably, because that's probably, you know, that's where the nuclear stuff is down that kind of level. It's on the table, right? And that's where. So,
that's a like whole new cool porn version of Spider-Man. If it is, and then you've got a web. Okay.
And then people have to come in with the gloves on. Some people are like, some of your, you know, you come with those gloves. And
I love this so much.
Glove. There's a hole in the glove. Oh no! Been contaminated. Good, we're having a good time. So you do the MASH report.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic show. I've been massively
Great.
And you did I see you dress up as a white man on
that,
the
that's
MASH report?
Thing that happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was looking for it again and it couldn't find it online anywhere. So I thought I thought it might have been a weird dream I'd had.
Interesting, Richard. Cool to know about you. Yeah, no, I did. It was we interviewed a men's rights activist, and then, you know, the ultimate gag was that, you know, like, let's take a black woman who clearly is going to speak to a men's rights activist and not understand the plight, you know, of men, and particularly of white men and what their struggles are, and then, like, walk around in his shoes as everybody does in investigative journalism. It's like, not enough to ask questions. No, I gotta go out and get a suit and some outfits and whatever. So, yeah, it was to do that whole, let's really truly investigate this. So I did spend like 3 hours in makeup getting like spray painted and having glued wigs on and things to turn into this, what I feel like passable, like, you know, white, maybe British man, but they didn't have me do an accent, which is good because I can't. And then I just, you know, walked around, tried to chat up women, tried to like talk to, you know, guys on the street and just be like, yeah, I mean, God, you're being a white guy, right? It's like, whew, you know, like, so, what I will say, the most fascinating thing to me was just like, one, I put on the trousers and I was like, what the fuck did they give you for pockets? Like, they went all the way down to here. Women never get any pockets. They're like, it's going to obstruct our view of your ass, so no pockets for you. And so, like, I was just like, the pockets were so deep and I felt fine just like sitting down like this everywhere I went and talking to everyone like this. And I was just like, this is like, I can see how this would psychologically start to evolve the way that I just acted all the time, just from having room to have possessions and just having space to air out my goodies to the world. Like, it was just a sweet feeling, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a Hitler mustache for a year.
Yes.
So it was, you know, similarly weird.
When you did that, you shaved your mustache and had a Hitler mustache. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a thing you could take on and off.
It wasn't, because I felt like I had to have it for real.
Yeah.
Otherwise it wasn't a valid experiment.
Yeah.
It was horrible. Right? It was a horrible thing to do.
I mean, for everyone. When I saw a video of you doing that, I wondered what your day-to-day was when the 23 hours you were not on stage doing that, what that was like.
It was sort of, what I found quite interesting is that I didn't get much hassle. Most people avoided me. Sometimes people laughed at me. But I just felt like I was being judged all the time. And as a white man, I've never walked down the street worrying about people. It was really interesting. So I kind of got like this, I felt at any moment I could be physically attacked just for the way I looked, which again, you know, it could happen for various other reasons, but not because I'm a white man, because there's someone seen me walking around with a Hitler mustache and wants to kill me. It was very psychologically weird. I was always delighted when I had the chance to get rid of it.
Yeah, but, how did that, did you find that feeling like a... I mean, I guess it's fair to say social pariah. Like, did you feel like that status upped your resentment or anger more? Like, did it get, you know, it's kind of like character work. Did it go outside in? Did you feel like a little bit more like me against the world when you were wearing that for a year?
Yeah, I felt like it did change the way I felt like I was being, you know, I fit in, even though people weren't necessarily giving me that information, that I felt it. So, and I think correctly, but you don't know. You don't know how anyone else feels in their life, so you don't know, and you don't know how people are judging. I think people mainly thought I just looked insane, I think, because I didn't have Hitler hair, I just had a Hitler moustache. So the worst thing that happened was a white van man on Shepherd's Bush Green at midnight said, "Well done, mate, you're a man after my own heart."
Oh.
Which, as if... if he was just a little bit braver, he'd be walking around dressed as Hitler. But it was absolutely chilling. That was really upsetting.
Yeah, of course.
But otherwise, it was just it was that. It made you feel, not angry, but just like a victim, and like, you know, like I started pulling it out subconsciously, and and I felt very. I was only recently with my now wife. At the time, so it was amazing. She sort of stuck with
that brave, committed woman. Like, you got married, and a year later, you're like, "Hey, I'm going to do this Hitler mustache thing," and she's like, "Okay, I'm staying. Yes, I will bear your children. Yep, totally."
Yeah, I mean, she does dress up as Eva Braun at home, but it's, it might have been what sealed the deal.
Fair enough. And you acted like you knew nothing about the fetish world.
But is it, it's interesting to go through these things for comedy, and it's, you know, I think it is, that's, yeah. I don't know how real you felt as a white man. Obviously, a little bit kind of you when you knew it was a joke.
Well, but by the end of the day, you're taking that face off and you forgot what your face looked like because you got used to this guy's face. Yeah. I'm like, I'm Jeff now, you know? Like, and I've got Jeff's worries and concerns, and I'm going to go back to somewhere in the Midlands, I presume, where Jeff lives, you know? But
it sort of also makes you realize how crazy, or I mean, it's that craziness of the way we judge each other. And the way, and the just, you know, something like skin color is so, I mean, and there's no, I know there's more to it than that, but it's,
there is, and there isn't.
So it's, but, you know, it's so, like, on a childish level, a child would go, that's stupid. It's like the worst episode of Star Trek there would ever be, although most of them would be literally about
with
this.
With, like, but an orange cat and a black cat, and they're like, oh, that orange cat, you know, it's, they're cats. I mean, yeah, I think that, yeah, it is like a weird thing, and any kid would be like, that's stupid, but I think that we kind of constantly are attributing narratives to people as we look at them all the time. Like, I think that we attribute a narrative to our own lives when there really isn't one. It's just like random chaotic phenomena, and we like make stories. So we look at people and we make stories, and when there's already such a strong story about a person, it's so satisfying because you're like, oh, I got that one, you know? And I think that's part of the reason our brains, you know, we do that.
That's what I dislike about it, is the kind of laziness of, because it's, I have to get to know someone to know if I'm going to hate them.
Yes.
And if you can just make a decision based on what they look like, that's very lazy
it
way
is,
to hate people.
But it's like the junk food of you know, of stereotype. You know, it's just kind of like, that's easy. And people like cheeseburgers. People like chips, you know? So it's easy to do.
Do you think it's interesting that, is it the case that racism is more prevalent in areas where people, where it's more like there are less ethnic from black people or different people, if it's in a
well,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? Because like if you're in London, it's not really a
well
big
as
deal.
Much of a problem as it is in other places where there are fewer. I mean, I would say
as in Warsaw, Indiana. I'll just pick that up off the top of my head.
Well, okay, so yes and no. Like, yes, I think that when your only exposure to a person is through media, whether it's news or film or television, you're definitely getting a skewed, biased perspective. And then when you meet those people, you come to them with all of the baggage of stuff that they never gave you. And so I think that the sort of ignorance aspect of racism is stronger there. But then I think also sometimes, especially in cities, you know, like, you're pressed up against these people, and yes, that makes you get to understand and know them more, but also you always hate the person who's right here. You know what I mean? Like, you always hate, like, the country always hates the country that's just there. You know? And you're like, you realize nobody else in the world can tell you guys apart. And they're like, yeah, but we hate them. Yeah. You know? So I think there's also a level of, you know, the proximity, especially in times of economic crisis, really does bring out a lot more racism that you wouldn't expect, like, these days, you know?
Yeah. Is the problem that people don't want to admit that... It's all like it's everyone's got to start from the perspective that they're the top, and so if they're not, if they feel that they're somehow not the top, they should be at the top. So there's got to be, they've got to blame
somebody
someone.
Else's fault. Yeah, exactly.
It's people being unable to look inside themselves and say, actually, I'm part of the problem here.
Yes, and also to look outside of themselves and go like, yeah, things are shit right now. Like, I'm not alone. I don't need to take the blame. But like, okay, yes, I could be better. I could work harder. But like, all of us could be better and work harder. And at a certain point, you also have to be like, how hard do I need to work for you people? Like, I, you know, didn't ask to be here either. Like, I'm working as hard as I can. And then you have to remember, like, actually, system's not set up for you to be to live your dreams and, you know, be what you want to be and all that stuff. And I think a lot of times when you can take that pressure off of yourself, because I think those people do have the instinct to kind of blame themselves or go like, why can't I? And then instead of facing that like reality and looking into themselves and go like, why can't I? They go like, it must be someone else's fault, you know, because they can't look at things that they can change about themselves. And so they blame.
Yeah. And it's interesting to say someone like Trump, and in the UK, like someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg or Nigel Farage, that like people would look at them and go, you know, they're going to be the person that helps me out, rather than looking at those rich people and going, these guys are the problem. Well, yeah. You know, that they were, that the Trump supporters you know, I think I just mentioned Trump in a tweet this week, and very vaguely, and like four or five people from America searching for Trump got in touch with me to tell me I was a libtard, etc. But they obviously respect him so much, but they're not able to say this guy is stealing money and is
I wonder how much they respect him as much more than like he represents them very intimately, and so they identify in some way, and so they feel like they're being attacked constantly, and so they have to defend themselves. I don't know. I just don't understand how anyone can respect him. And that's not just me being a libtard. I'm just like, he is a bold-faced liar. Like, he lies all of the time. Yeah. At some point, how can you respect that? How can you excuse that many lies unless you're in an abusive relationship, which is maybe what's happening to all of these people, is that they, you know?
Yeah. Like, but it's for me that he never for a second says he's done anything wrong, right? So any human being in any situation, he never admits he's made a mistake. He never admits he's culpable for anything. He's always the best in every situation.
Yeah.
The worst thing, the thing for me that really, I mean, amongst many of the things, but the thing when he was arguing all that time about the size of his inauguration crowd. It's like, we can see that people didn't, you know, why is that so important to you, the fact that you've got to
we've already
tell
been
that
sent
lie?
The pic. We can see it's not big.
It doesn't even that matter, because your people couldn't have got across to Washington anyway. It's not important, so why does it care? Why do you care so much? But for someone to never say, actually, yeah, I was wrong. It was wrong of me to have sex with a porn star when my wife just had a child, or whatever. You would at least go, well, there's a little bit of humanity.
But that's the epitome of childishness, right? Like, you become an adult, like, you know, not only when your body matures, but like when you screw up something you can't unscrew up, and you have to take accountability for that thing. And as long as you can, like, be like, just continue to lie and say like, oh, I never did that, I never whatever, the people who follow him want to be him, you know? They're like, yeah, like, he's like the Fonz, and like everything he does is cool.
He is like the Fonz.
And he's Teflon, and he never gets caught for anything, and he has sex with porn stars, and he's rich, and he gets whatever he wants. And I think that they see him as some kind of a role model, like, you know, he's what they could be if they were just the cool guy in high school. And I really think it's that simplistic, sadly. Yeah.
It's interesting. Well, and for all the Trump fans at home, I don't like any of the other... Jeremy Corbyn's a dick as well. Are you happy? Oh, no, now the Corbyn fans are going to come and have a go at me. Paddy Ashdown's rubbish. Yeah, I've got it covered now. You saw Maria Bamford's show last week.
I did.
I had her on the podcast last week.
She's dope.
What an amazing woman she is.
Yeah.
Did you hang out with her? Do you know her?
I met her once in 2009 in New York at a club. She was really awesome and very just sort of gracious and down to earth and all of that wonderful stuff. And I feel like when people are really talented, they can be kind because they're not like afraid of people finding them out, you know?
Yeah, she is. I mean, out of everyone I've had on here who's like a big star, she is like the most down-to-earth person.
Yeah.
She was very, very nice. Was her stand-up show any good?
Her stand-up show was great. I mean, yeah. Like, I mean, she talks about mental illness in her work a lot. But, like, you know, in that show in particular, she talked about, you know, like, being, like, committed at some point. So, I think, yes, when you are in a place, when you're in a hospital gown, you know, like, that has been issued by a county, and, like, you've been sort of locked up to protect yourself, like, you're as down-to-earth as you can possibly get. You know, like, I think that life experience will make you realize to always be humble.
And, I tried to see your show in Edinburgh last year, and you were on a bus.
I was on a bus.
And I couldn't get in because
it was a bus. Yeah. And the bus was full.
Very well. But are you doing Edinburgh again 2018?
Yes, I am. Well, just so you know, I'm doing that show at Soho Theatre in a couple of weeks. So if you really want to come, you still could.
I can. I'm on tour myself around the country, so I might not be able to.
One of these days when you're not in Glasgow, stop by.
Yeah, we'll look into it. You might be able to. I'm owed a date night with my... It's nearly my wedding anniversary as we're recording this, so maybe we'll come as a wedding anniversary.
I mean,
yeah, but that's only living another year. I don't think they congratulate me for... Well, I'm just waiting to stay with me.
Living another... Yes, exactly.
After the way I am.
365 days of just keeping her...
She hasn't heard any of this series of podcast yet, so after this might be the last.
She stayed with you during Hitler Mustache.
She
like
did,
I think
yeah.
She's solid on that. But I will be going to Edinburgh this year. And by the time this comes out, I will have figured out the title of my show and what it's about. But I still
And you're going to be in a bus, or you're going to be in a proper
venue? I'm going to be at the Monkey Barrel. So like, you know, right off of the mile, like actually in a club that exists there. Because last year, everyone's like, I mean, the bus is cool, but you can't do this again. Like, there's people lined out in the rain outside of a bus. Like, this is depressing. You can't do this anymore. And I was like, okay, fine. Because if I had my druthers, I would do the bus again. It's a great comedy venue. Yeah. It is really, it's intimate. It's perfect. You have this much space on stage with you and a microphone, and everyone's sitting here, and it's like a fireside chat, but it's on a bus. So it, like, people just come in and feel like anything could happen, and it's wild. And that's the kind of audience I want to have at a show. And it self-filters out the douches. Like, people who go there and walk around with two beers, like, this doesn't seem very good. I'm like, great, I don't want you at my show. Don't come. You know, so it was a perfect venue. I highly recommend it if you're a comic. Play a bus.
Good idea. I haven't seen you live, but I've seen lots of your stuff online, and it's fucking awesome. So
Thank you. Do
check out Desiree. Thank Ladies you. And gentlemen, Desiree Birch! Hey. You have been listening to Richard Herring's That's the Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Desiree Birch. The music's by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, to everyone at the Desiree Theatre, to everyone at Go Past the Strike. And all my friends and family and everyone who knows me, especially my mum. Hi, Barbara. Hope you're all right. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. It's a Guy Potato. Fuzz. And GoFastTheStrike.com production. Come and see me on tour, richchang.com/games. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.